Last night I told a lost luggage story. I always try to do that when this reading comes up, but somebody actually came up to me and they said, "Father, you told that story 18 years ago." So I'm not telling it again. If you want to hear that, tune in last night. But I thought of something better last night that was more appropriate actually for this, instead of a gratuitous story that doesn't have anything to do with the gospel particularly. In 2010, I was on what we call the Presbyteral Council. It's a gathering of one priest from each area, and I was the Salem rep then. I'm on the same council now. It's actually pretty boring, and I was telling God, I said, I don't want to go to this, and I felt like I needed to go out of obedience. So I went, and they said there that it was the year of the priest, and Pope Benedict was naming St. John Vianney the patron saint of all parish priests. You'd think he would have already had that title, but that's what they were doing, and each diocese in the world was sending two representatives. So we didn't have any because they had asked for names, and very few priests had put their names in the hat. So he said, I'm going to pass the bucket around this table along with the few names that were submitted from my brethren around here, and we're going to pull two names out. And as you probably know, I got my name pulled out, which in retrospect, I was the worst person to get picked. I've already been in Rome five times, you know. But anyway, God's will be done. I got that. And at that time, Father Peter Smith, he wasn't a bishop yet, and I were off to Rome. So it was, you know, that in itself is a story of great interest. I thought it was going to be like Vatican II. We're sitting out there in the piazza with those Gilligan hats that you may remember from previous homily. But the funny thing about that incident was we got to Rome, Leonardo da Vinci Airport, and I'll call him Bishop Peter, but he wasn't bishop then. Bishop Peter Smith's bag didn't come in. Mine wouldn't have either, except that I only had a carry-on. So I kind of just figured it was a short enough trip. Why risk it, you know? I usually don't travel light, but I did that time. So I got saved from that because I was right behind him. And so for some reason, he never did get his luggage. And that was the largest concelebrated mass in church history, that mass. And Father Peter Smith did not even have an alb, so he didn't concelebrate. And I thought, gee, that's sad. He didn't have time to buy an alb or anything in Rome. And in thinking about that on the way home, I've shared this with him. I don't know what he felt about it, but in as much as he was made a bishop a few months later and found himself back in Rome in what he says, if you notice at these papal masses, the bishops are all under the piazza there, under the awning, in a kind of a gated area. They call it the bishop's corral. That's what the bishops call it. So anyway, he said, next time I was in Rome, I was in that bishop's corral. And I thought to myself, and I told him that, I said, it's almost as if God wanted you to have nothing before he gave you this role, this honor, I guess. And it's kind of like, in order to be filled with God, we have to be emptied of ourselves. And so this is actually, this advice, nobody would take this advice when you're going on a trip. Let's face it, we all want to have money and at least one other pair of shoes. I have been on many trips and a number of pilgrimages, and one lady one time brought a whole suitcase full of shoes. Hey, some of you guys that are married, I don't know if you know that any of your wives ever done this. You won't admit, you are not going to tell me here. Tell me later. Some lady actually did do this, but he says, don't take a spare shoes, don't take a suitcase, don't take any money, and don't move around. If you get bad accommodations, just stay there and eat whatever they serve you. So it's this advice is not practical, and yet we've been hearing it all our lives. And it comes up almost every year because it's in all three of the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So it must mean something more. And so obviously what our Lord is trying to teach these 72, because later he won't say this to the disciples, but he wants them, who don't know Jesus very well yet, to depend on divine providence, that they really don't know what they're getting into or who's going to accept them or who it is even that's sending them. They're going out and preaching what Jesus is teaching them and making the way for the Lord as he goes about Israel. So, and they come back rejoicing. But when we, nobody likes to be unprepared for the future. So we try our best on trips. I know one year I tried everything to make it as comfortable as possible. I got upgraded seats and everything, and paid money for an extra, a better accommodations, and you know, everything I could think of on one of these pilgrimages. And everything still went wrong, and I thought, well, that was a waste of time, you know, because it's like the Twilight Zone. You go on a trip like that, and anybody who's ever been on any trip, you really lose control of your life once you get on an airplane. You never know what's going to happen. That's a good joke. I do have a lost luggage joke. Passenger comes up. Well, maybe it's a real story. You'll have to decide for yourself. Passenger comes up to the counter and says, I want a ticket to New York, and I want my bags to go to Miami. And the agent said, "We can't do that, sir." She said, and the pastor said, "Why not? You did it the last time I flew." Now, you know, that's all you're going to remember about this homily. And if I come back 18 years from now, you're going to say, "Father, you told that story 18 years ago." So I have had my suitcase. I've lost my bags twice. And, you know, the one time it happened, it was American, actually. And I told her what I used to do what you're doing. She said, "Well, Father, the shoe's on the other foot now, isn't it, Father?" I know better than to sass the agent, though. If you want to get your luggage back, be nice to the person helping you. That's a lesson I learned a long time ago, you know. But God empties our bags. And we find ourselves in situations where we don't have what we needed, or something makes us feel our poverty. That's what I mean by that. By suitcase, we mean we just find ourselves in circumstances that require more than we have the resources for. And God will periodically allow that to happen so that we know that we need God, that we are not so full and rich. As he tells one of the churches in Revelation, you say to yourselves, "I'm full and rich and in want of nothing," when in fact you're pitiably poor, blind, and naked too. He said, "I warn you, buy for me the gold that lasts forever." And if we are so full of ourselves and our lives that we never have time for God or to pray or to go to church, then we are losing out on life because we really aren't full. We only think we are. Money only lasts in this world. Stuff only lasts in this world. When Father Coleman passed away, everything stayed behind. We cleaned out the duplex. You know, Father Athanasius is there now. It's going to be the same with all of us. And to me, that was a profound lesson as a priest, that we just don't know the day or the hour. It shook everybody up here and in the whole valley, actually. And I think it was meant to. It's like whether you're a priest or a pope or anybody else, we just don't know when we have to say goodbye to this world. So why not anticipate that? What do I do with my resources, my time and my money and my life, my family? Do I take time with them? Do I tithe? Do I pray? Do I make time for God? Because if we make time for him, he'll be there for us in the sense that we'll be ready and open when the Spirit asks. So in a sense, the less full we feel or the more needy we feel, the closer we often are to God. If you look at those who are in the scriptures, the ones that were closest to him, the ones that were the neediest, like Mary Magdalene is the perfect example of that. She was an outcast in society, and Jesus healed her and befriended her. Matthew was the same way. He was a tax collector and hated by his fellow Jews for working for the Romans, and Jesus picked him to be an apostle because he was open. He knew that he was not living a life that was of God, but he wanted Something in him wanted something more. All we have to do is realize that there's something more to life than what we're living. And God forbid that we have to get to the end of our lives only to find out that what we've chased after is not satisfying in the end. So Jesus wants that to happen. And he also says an interesting thing here. He says, you know, if you find your accommodations are not to your liking, don't keep trying to upgrade yourself over and over. He doesn't mean that we shouldn't, you know, get a different house or something or buy a new car or whatever. That's not what he means at all. But that what he says there reminds me of what the Imitation of Christ says about monks that are looking out the window and thinking, gosh, you know, that other monastery sure looks good. Maybe I should move there. And he says to them, a change of place has deceived many. If we think that by moving somewhere else we're going to solve all our problems, usually we don't, because the problem is usually within ourselves. If I'm not happy here, I probably won't be happy over there. If I'm not happy with what I have now, getting more of something else probably won't lead to lasting happiness, because happiness is not getting more, but being happy with what we have first. And God doesn't make us equal on earth, but in the world to come, everything depends on how we respond to God. So we often find that if prayer is difficult, that's often when we are being most pleasing to God, because we're not getting anything in return at the moment. But we can give, as my friend St. Faustina I bring up so often. She felt miserable between being sick all the time and the sisters picking on her because they knew she was having visions and they didn't believe it. And now she'll probably be a doctor of the church before long. And she, all she would say to God throughout her diary, she said, I have nothing to give you. And the Lord said, well, I know you're miserable. Give me your misery. It sounds like a funny thing to say, but that was all she had. She felt miserable. And God was very pleased to accept this offering, and he filled that. He was able to use her so much because she felt so empty, so unworthy of religious life or of seeing him. And you know, and so this is the kind of thing that Jesus is kind of challenging us. We're all really on a journey. We're all on a constant journey of life. It's one day after the other, one day at a time. And God will periodically allow us, maybe so to speak, to not have our luggage come in like Bishop Smith did so many 15 years ago now. And I don't know if he learned the lesson, but I sure did, that God wanted to empty him symbolically before he filled him with that particular office. And he's a really good bishop. And I think, you know, I think he got the message too. And I realized, you know, the only way to lead a parish or to lead a family or to be a good person at work or whatever's going on in your life is to let Jesus fill us. If we think we've got all the answers, we're a loser, you know. There's nothing worse than a know-it-all that won't listen to anybody else's opinion but their own. They're never right all the time. Instead, God wishes that quality of openness where we're listening not only to others, but especially to Jesus, who has the answers, but wishes us to seek, to search. And in order to search, we have to know we are in need. In order to be in need, we have to be emptied a little. And that's a lot of what God is saying. And next time you travel, make sure and bring your money, your suitcase, and your shoes.